Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
100,000 deaths from COVID-19, a milestone ignored by the White House. Meanwhile, the chaos created for federal employees going back to work. And today on the show, the Government Affairs Director for the AFL-CIO, and later in the broadcast, mental health awareness, reaching out to the trades. An expert talks to us. Good afternoon and welcome to the Thursday, May 28th edition of America's Workforce. We're recorded right here in Cleveland, Ohio, for workers all across America. You can find us online, awfradio.com, and you can listen to this show wherever you stream podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, just some examples there. All right, we have two guests on the show today. Bill Samuel, who is the Government Affairs Director for the Labor Federation, will be our first guest, AFLCIO.org, which is an organization doing a whole lot of good work on their website, keeping workers informed of policies, protocols in various businesses, and like I've been saying for the last couple of months, the union difference, where workers are represented by a union, and you'll see a much better outcome for safety. Not perfect, okay, but much better than in a non-union workplace. Bill's going to talk about the HEROES Act, and you're wondering, why is it called the HEROES Act? Well, it's an acronym for the Health, Economic, and Recovery Omnibus Emergency Solutions Act, all right? That is the HEROES Act, and it follows the CARES Act, which was passed in March. This bill is just over 1,800 pages. It's $3 trillion. It includes a list of priorities, including another round of $1,200 stimulus checks, a raise for essential workers. Sharon Brown had a big play in that. Increase health insurance coverage and nearly $1 trillion in financial aid to local and state governments. Now, it passed the House. Vote was 208 to 199. Goes to the Senate, and Mitch McConnell says it's dead. It's not going anywhere. Also, it includes help for multi-employer pension funds. Now, if you missed yesterday's show, you can check out our podcast or go on our website, awfradio.com. And we had a really good interview with John Murphy. John is with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, one of the many proud sponsors of this show. And he talked specifically about that legislation. Now, the Teamsters were pushing the Butch Lewis Act. And he pointed out on yesterday's show that what they contained in the HEROES Act is much better. It's much better because Butch Lewis was pretty much a loan to the pension funds, which had to be paid off in, I think, 30 years. The HEROES Act, different. Only problem is, again, getting this passed. So Bill's going to talk about the potential solutions, as he put it, to the health and economic consequences of the pandemic. By the way, the AFL-CIO this week went ahead and endorsed Joe Biden to be the next president of the United States. And this is a comment from Rich Trumka, who is the head of the Labor Federation. He pointed out working people have responded to COVID-19 with passion and dedication, even as our federal government falls down on the job. He said, just imagine what we can accomplish with an ally in the White House. I'm sure Bill have some comments on that as well. We're bringing back Bob Swanson to the show. We had Bob on, I believe it was the end of March. Bob is a retired painting contractor affiliated with the Finishing Contractors Association International. And he is a suicide loss survivor. His oldest son died by suicide at the age of 33. This was 11 years ago, and that kind of propelled him to go on a national tour, more or less. And he zeroes in on the construction industry regarding mental illness and suicide prevention. Why the construction industry? Well, it turns out that the construction industry has more suicide deaths than any other industry. It has a suicide rate of nearly four times the rate of the general population. One of the big issues, and Bob's going to talk about this on the show, is the fact that, it's dominated by men. I know more women are getting into construction, but it's that burly attitude, tough guy image. Like, oh, okay, I got some problems, but I don't need any help. I'll work myself out of this situation. That seems to be the case. And think about injuries on the job. A lot of those injuries lead to drug addiction because they get prescription meds. They get hooked on that. And all of a sudden, your life is cascading downward. And that's when suicidal thoughts come into your mind. So Bob has done a really good job of reaching out to the trade, specifically the painters and allied trades. And there's a website called, let me see here, IUPATHelpingHand.com. He'll talk about that on the show, too. IUPATHelpingHand.com. And he's got some stuff posted there in case you want to get some more information on what he's talking about. So Bob Swanson, we're bringing him back. May, in case you didn't know, is Mental Health Awareness Month. And we're almost at the end of May. We figured let's bring Bob back to the broadcast and podcast and talk about this. All right. Well, we reached a milestone yesterday. Nothing to be happy about. Over 100,000 deaths due to the coronavirus. And if you're wondering where Donald Trump was yesterday, he was pretty quiet about it. Instead, the day before, his most direct comments were tweets on Tuesday saying if he didn't do his job very well and early, we would have lost 1.5 to 2 million people as opposed to 100,000. So that's the response. By the way, we have per capita and in ratio to population, we have more deaths than any country on the planet. Any country on the planet. Why is that? In the meantime, federal government workers are facing chaos and contradictory messaging as reopen initiatives are pressuring their agencies to return to work. Many agency workers, some of whom have kept working during the pandemic, are reporting still no plans for testing or contact tracing once reopen measures go into place. For instance, the State Department's reopen plan has no mask requirement and very few requirements for temperature checks or social distancing. Then you have the CIA and the Pentagon. They're facing heavy pressure to limit work from home arrangements due to the inability for home workers to view some classified documents. Yeah, that could be a problem. The IRS, they're offering incentive pay and sanitary materials to returning workers, but they've already had to rapidly close the Kansas-Missouri office. That's a big office, too. After an employee tested positive a few days after the office resumed operations. And then there's the Securities and Exchange Commission. They installed mandatory telework for most employees at least until July 15th. Meanwhile, strikes are going on. Waves of strikes by fruit packing house workers are occurring in Yakima Valley in Washington State. Workers have striked at seven different fruit packing houses in the region since May 7th. The issues, hazard pay, management responsiveness to COVID concerns, line supervisors undermining workers' concerns, workplace safety measures, and channels to voice complaints. None of the packing house workers have unions. None of them. While the Yakima Valley region has had historic labor advocacy from the 1960s through the 1980s, strikes are a first at the fruit packing houses, which were often seen as better work environments compared to those of the pickers. So far, one group, the Monston Fruit Warehouse Workers, have reached an agreement. Yeah. We've been talking on this show for the last couple of weeks. Workers are tired being treated this way, especially when they're seeing their coworkers die of this. Then we go to New Orleans. Sanitation workers are entering their fourth week of striking after initially being fired. Several of them fired, announcing a strike on May 5th and replaced with people leaving prison under work release programs. Workers have been allowed to return to their jobs out of labor dispute concerns. However, the workers have so far refused, citing wages as low as $10.25 an hour, poor sanitary protections, and wage theft. While the workers are operating under the city waste union banner, they do not have an NLRB-recognized union. And one more here. As President Trump has been instituting more restrictive immigration policies, the meatpacking industry is now voicing concerns about labor shortages. Immigrant workers are facing dual concerns of restrictions on seasonal worker provisions and retaliation upon voicing concerns about the pandemic and sanitation. Immigrants comprise 40% of the industry's workers, making up as high as 66% in states like Nebraska. Many meatpacking companies have been criticized for their low wages, poor worker protections and benefits, and the exploitation of immigrant desperation, and are now struggling to recruit more workers under the same labor conditions as the restrictions are tightening. Good luck on that one. Jeez, what a mess is going on here in America. All right, we have to take a break. You are listening to America's Workforce, our segment with Bill Samuel coming up next. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output, a half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
This special message goes out to all veterans and dependents of veterans who are living in Cuyahoga County. The Cuyahoga County Veterans Service Commission proudly provides a wide variety of services and assistance, including the following: filing VA claims, helping obtain disability or widow pensions, assistance obtaining military records, memorial affairs, social work, rent or mortgage assistance, utility bills, food, clothing and hygiene, and VA medical transportation. For more information about these services or your eligibility, call 1-844-405-VETS. That's 1-844-405-8387. Or go online to CuyahogaVets.org. The Cuyahoga County Veterans Service Commission, veterans helping veterans since 1886.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Good afternoon and welcome back to America's Workforce, recorded here in Cleveland, Ohio. For workers all across America, you can listen to the show, any show we do, wherever you stream podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, just some examples. And once again, once you get hooked on the show, please subscribe to our podcast and give us a rating, and we would appreciate a 5-star rating. We also appreciate our sponsors. This segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with work, and slowly but surely, we're getting back to work. You can find them online at ulagency.org. In fact, we'll have Dave Meganhart joining us next Wednesday. Right now, let's go to line number one. Welcome back to the show. I'll always enjoy talking to this guy. Working from home like a big chunk of America, Bill Samuel, Government Affairs Director of the Labor Federation, here to talk about the HEROES Act and other solutions to this pandemic that we're all engulfed in right now. Hey, Bill, how are we doing at home today?
We're doing okay. I'm getting used to it.
You're getting used to it.
Yeah. It's been 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, D.C. D.C. is still a hot spot. So although they're just announced yesterday, they may be allowing outdoor dining and a few other sort of slow reopenings. Office buildings are shut down. So, we're at home.
Yeah, there's a number of hot spots still in the country today. But President Trump says we got to get back to normal here. It doesn't matter if people are dying. Let's talk about this Heroes Act. We had a good conversation yesterday with the Teamsters on the segment dealing with the multi-employer pension funds. You know, the Teamsters were pushing the Butch Lewis Act.
Right.
And this one has gone way beyond that. The only problem is is Mitch McConnell. We'll talk about that in a minute. But,
right.
You know, why, if you can, I know you. There's 1,800 pages. How much of that did you read? Okay, let's be honest here.
I did read the 90-page summary, and actually it was interesting because it came out 2 o'clock on an afternoon during an afternoon, and at 2 o'clock. We happen to have a AFL-CIO board meeting by phone going on, and I was expected to give a report on the latest from Washington. And so I'm like busily flipping through pages, you know, just as fast as I can, and sort of announcing to the AFL-CIO presidents, you know, what's in this proposal, because it was eagerly awaited. I mean, Speaker Pelosi had been talking about it for some time. We had been giving her lots of input, and I don't know if we've covered this before, but the AFL-CIO had put together these five economic essentials. It was basically our agenda for how to confront the COVID virus and the economic devastation that came with it. And I'm flipping through the pages, and it turns out that the Heroes Act really pretty closely matches what we had been saying were the priorities for the labor movement. So we were very pleased, and it was a sort of a funny experiment trying to read it while I'm talking to the union president. But I think they were pretty pleased too that it so closely matched our agenda.
So let's run down some of the things. And what's glaring here is, I guess, another stimulus check, $1,200. Let's start right there.
Well, there's more. Yeah, there's money for individuals who are hurting financially. Bigger. And the checks are $1,200, but now it's $1,200 for children as well. I think up to $3,600. I can't remember the total now, but it's a pretty significant amount of money, plus an extension through January of the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program. That's the expanded unemployment insurance, although the program has had a rocky start. I think more and more people are getting those checks, we hope. It's really state by state because they manage their unemployment programs, of course. So those are things that go to individuals. Plus, if you've been laid off and lost your health insurance, 100% subsidy for your portion of COBRA is covered by this bill. Very important. Ooh. At a time when people are, you know, vulnerable health-wise to be getting their health insurance paid for. So those are some of the individual items. And then there's money for businesses to stay open. If not having employees show up, at least paying them while they're on furlough, very important to do that. And then something that we had been harping on for months, really, is beefing up OSHA standards so that employers know what is expected of them to keep their workers safe. We've heard all these horror stories at meatpacking plants and even grocery stores, and you know, where people are contracting the disease, considered essential workers, and OSHA's providing no guidance. Or if they are, it's voluntary and it's weak. So the bill, the HEROES Act, insists that within 7 days of passage, OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, has to issue an emergency standard informing employers what they must do to have workers show up on their property and to keep them safe. So very important to us. And then state and local government aid. We've been talking for a while about this. There are almost a million public sector workers have been laid off across the country, and state, county, municipal workers. This would help fund not only to keep them on payrolls, but to keep their services flowing. These are people who provide important public services, whether it's, you know, sanitation or welfare checks or police protection. I mean, all kinds of things that state and local governments provide. So those are some of the main features, and a lot more. As you said, it's 1,800 pages long. It's quite a massive bill. But the sad thing is that Mitch McConnell has said he's in no hurry. He wants to take a pause. He doesn't see apparently the damage that's being inflicted every day on American families. And the Speaker Pelosi's just barreling ahead, as she does. She wants the Senate to take it up, and she'll do everything she can to force them to do it.
Well, I like this comment from McConnell. He called the bill a big laundry list of pet priorities, and it has no chance of becoming law. No chance at all.
Right. Well, you know, you sort of unpack that. Pet priorities, health care, worker protections, unemployment insurance, Yeah. State and local aid. I mean, maybe these are, maybe it's become, we've become so polarized, if you care about those things, it's considered by the other party, the Republican Party, to be pet priorities. I don't get it. I mean, I don't know. You know, you poll Americans, and these things are very popular with American people.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm thinking, why wasn't this covered in the CARES Act, too? I mean,
well,
I'm sure,
I mean,
the Democrats...
CARES Act started, you know, they had $150 billion for state and local governments. That's not nearly enough. And this bill, the HEROES Act, has almost $900 billion. These sound like huge amounts. Of course, you know, we spend, you know, well more than that on our national defense and, you know, and on tax cuts, you know, for the wealthy. But this is the richest country in the world, and we're kind of on our knees right now because everything was shut down at once. And then, you know, hundreds of thousands of people got sick. And it revealed a couple of things. One, we have a terrible health insurance system. A lot of people were going without health care.
Right.
And two, we weren't prepared to provide the material that hospitals need and nurses, you know, PPE. We had a lot of talk about that, gowns and protective gear. We didn't have it. We were relying on China and other countries to provide it. And when we ran out, we didn't have the capacity to build it ourselves or to manufacture it ourselves. So it revealed a supply chain problem in this country that really has to be addressed. We need to be able to quickly respond. We certainly have the know-how. And we have the money. Mm-hmm. We just gave it away. And so, actually, at the last executive council session of the AFL-CIO, we passed a call to Congress to get back to the business of creating a manufacturing strategy so we are prepared next time this happens.
Oh, Bill, I can't tell you how many times I've talked about that on this show. I've been hosting this show 22 years.
Yeah.
There's so many times we brought that up. We do not have a manufacturing strategy in this country. Germany has one. I mean, many countries in Europe have it.
Right. And, you know, you think of World War II, there's been a lot of talk about something called the Defense Production Act. Previous presidents have had the ability, this one does too, he just doesn't use it, to convert our, you know, what the industrial might we have. We certainly turn out a lot of automobiles. Not as many as we used to, turn that industrial might into something that we need on an emergency basis. In World War II, it was fighter planes. And now it's surgical masks and ventilators. And, you know, eventually, it took a few months, we got the ventilator problem fixed. I think Ford and other companies, GE, are now producing ventilators where they may have been producing something else. We still don't have enough N95 masks. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's now almost June. It's been 4 months since this thing started, and we and nurses still don't have enough of the basic, you know, supplies that they need to stay safe when they're taking care of people.
That's amazing.
It's incredible. It's incredible. Yeah.
Bill, we reached a milestone yesterday. I'm sure you heard that it's over 100,000 deaths. And you just talked about the fact that our healthcare system is a train wreck in this country. We don't have a single-payer system. I mean, we're the only major industrialized country on the planet that does really not take care of the health of its people. Would you attribute that to the... I mean, you know, when you take a look at how we stand in the world when it comes to population and the amount of deaths from COVID-19, it's astronomical here in the United States. In your opinion, do you think it's because of our healthcare system?
You know, it's real. I'm not a, you know, obviously not a medical statistician. We do have a surprisingly high number of deaths here, you know, per capita, given the size of our country. I think we're maybe approaching sixth or eighth in terms of per capita death rate. We supposedly have the best health care available. Well, it's not really available. We have the best knowledge base, apparently. We invent a lot of things. We create a lot of medicines and techniques. But they're not available because they're expensive. You know, we have a profit-driven healthcare system. That may be a reason a lot more people have died. I don't really know. I think also too many of our political leaders didn't take it seriously quickly enough. You know, some countries locked down really quickly. They saw what was coming.
Right.
The advice of professionals. You know, many of our governors, you know, you think of Governor Kemp and Governor DeSantis in Florida, and, you know, they were very slow. They didn't believe it. They were listening to Trump and Fox News saying, oh, it'll go away. You know, it's all a left-wing conspiracy. It's not real. It's fake news. We are very slow to act, I think, and that's one of the problems. We also have pockets of poverty and very low health care you know, places where diabetes, you know, is almost epidemic proportions, that makes you very vulnerable to COVID. Bad living conditions, and those things contribute as well. And we're not the only country who has it, but we shouldn't have it given the wealth, the overall wealth of our country.
All right. Good point. Let's take a break. You're listening to America's Workforce. Bill Samuel, Government Affairs Director of the AFL-CIO on our live line. Bob Swanson will be rejoining us. We had him on the show back in March. Did you know that the suicide rate in the construction industry is four times that of the national average? He's going to talk about that. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and it's all part of America's Workforce. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
Part union newsletter, part industry trade magazine. The Labor Citizen provides the most comprehensive coverage of the issues that matter to the hard-working members of Ohio's labor trades. Building trades unions that subscribe to the Labor Citizen guarantee their members receive a monthly report crafted by their own union leaders, along with interesting feature stories and news relevant to Ohio's union construction industry. The full-color tabloid is already being delivered to active and retired members from nearly 50 different building trade unions. You won't find more comprehensive coverage of the news and issues important to Ohio's labor trades anywhere. And the only way you can have this valuable monthly publication delivered to your mailbox is if your local union decides to join. If your building trades union is not receiving the Labor Citizen, ask why at your next regular meeting. Or send an email to info@laborcitizen.com for more information. That email address again is info@laborcitizen.com.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
Once again, welcome back to America's Workforce, recorded here in Cleveland, Ohio. For workers across America, you can find us online, awfradio.com, and you can listen to this show, any show we do, Monday through Friday, wherever you stream podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, just some examples there. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Bill Samuel. Bill is the Government Affairs Director of the Labor Federation, AFLCIO.org is a website. And I want to tell you, they've been so helpful to me over the course of this pandemic in providing a lot of newsworthy stories with regard to what unions are doing to help workers, to help their own workers or help people in other industries. It's been traumatic. I noticed Rich Trumka's getting more. Last time we talked, I'm saying we got to get him back on the show here. I see him on Bloomberg News. He's been on Fox News. And this week, went out and as a leader of the AFL-CIO, and I thought it was kind of early, but maybe you could chime in on this. He endorsed Joe Biden for president. Was that a surprise, especially now? I mean, he is going to be the candidate, but he's still not the candidate yet. That's my point.
Yeah, he hasn't been, obviously, the convention hasn't occurred, so he hasn't been officially nominated, but he's the only one left in the race. It was early for us. I'm sure in past cycles, it's not unprecedented. I think we often, when a Democrat is in the White House, who we like, I think we endorse them early, you know, when they don't have primary opposition. I think of Bill Clinton's second term, for example. But I think people felt that it was time. The differences are so stark, there's really no question. I mean, even those who thought it might be early, because they weren't done polling their members, individual presidents, all said, listen, we're all going to end up here. And I think the feeling was this is a race that so much depends on the Republican money machine is so big, so large that we got to get ready. And plus, of course, we have to do all this in a different way. You know, we're not knocking on doors as we would be normally. We don't have legions of volunteers talking to their neighbors and coworkers because they're either not at work or they can't, you can't canvass your neighborhood. So we had to get an early start. And it just seemed right. There was a good discussion among the general board. That's who makes the decision, AFL-CIO, leaders of all of our national unions. And they decided pretty overwhelmingly to go with Joe Biden. And he actually got on the call, it was a Zoom call, and spoke to them and took questions, did a very good job. He certainly knows our issues. He made the point, as he often makes, that in 1972, when he first ran for office, he did it with the support of the Delaware AFL-CIO. He said if it hadn't been for organized labor, he wouldn't have won, and he's had our support in every race since then. We haven't agreed on 100% of the issues over the years, but pretty close. And I think actually he's moved in our direction more than the other way. He's really become a spokesperson for labor rights, workers' rights, ability to organize. He talks about unions being the sort of fundamental to our middle class and our society and being the only counterweight to corporate power, which he was pretty clear about. I mean, he's sounding very much like a union leader. We'll see how the campaign unfolds, but I think we're very comfortable being in his corner.
He's not afraid to say the word union. There's a lot of politicians today that just jump and they just, no, can't do that. Can't do that. No.
Yeah, it seems to be getting easier as people turn to unions more, when times are tough and corporations seem to have nothing balancing their power, people do turn to unions, and that's happening in all kinds of places at universities where graduate teaching assistants are organizing, online media companies are organizing. You've got sporadic organizing drives at places like Amazon and the online gig companies. There's a lot of organizing going on. And then, of course, you've got the traditional places like meatpacking, grocery stores, where people are realizing, hey, I need a union because I'm being sent into, I'm being put in harm's way and there's no one looking out for me. So we feel pretty good about the future of the labor movement, frankly, despite the horrible situation we're all in.
And some of this organizing is happening in the South, where you have these strong right-to-work states. They've been right-to-work for years. Mississippi, for one, we had a story yesterday, and this was courtesy of the Labor Federation website. The UFCW, Food and Commercial Workers, organized a plant in Mississippi.
There's organizing in the South going on. And, right-to-work is interesting. You mentioned right-to-work is in 22 states, started in the South, kind of as a racist part of the, of the racism of employers. Trying to pit workers against each other many, many years ago. And, we now have this PRO Act. We've talked about that a lot, the Protecting the Right to Organize Act, which passed the House in February. Almost every Democrat, I think, seven voted for it. We picked up five Republicans. And that repeals right to work nationally. No state could be right to work if the PRO Act became law. That's a big deal. That's basically repealing the Taft-Hartley Act. Nobody on this listening to this discussion remembers 1947 Taft-Hartley Act, but it was a really big deal taking on unions after our growth in the pre- and post-war period. So the PRO Act repeals Taft-Hartley, and it's overwhelmingly popular, the PRO Act, that is. So I think the country is changing. It's changing its mind about this, which is really welcome.
1947, Bill, that was 6 years before I was born, so you're really going back in a time here.
Okay, but you read about it.
Yeah, I read about it, of course. We got a couple of minutes left here. I just want to pick your brain a little bit about moving forward. I know you mentioned at the top of the show that Washington is still a hot spot. It's tough to get. I know you're doing Zoom meetings, you're doing all the virtual stuff and all that, but as far as the agenda goes, is there any game plan here? I mean, a lot of these bills, these are good pieces of legislation. They're sitting on Senator McConnell's desk here. You mentioned the PRO Act. Here we have the HEROES Act. Good stuff for workers. It's going to be a tough road to hoe here. What's your thoughts moving forward?
Yeah, well, it's about to be June, and so we've got, what, 6 months left till the 117th Congress. Hopefully we'll have a different makeup in that Congress with more worker-friendly leadership in the Senate. I think we already have it in the House and hopefully in the White House. Well, we're not giving up. We have this big mobilization plan for next week around the HEROES Act. Hopefully you'll see evidence of that in Cleveland and other places around Ohio, where labor's organizing activities, some online, some in person, where it's safe to support the HEROES Act and push it across the finish line in the Senate. But it's true. There's 250 bills, I think, that were passed in the House on a bipartisan basis that are sitting on a desk somewhere in Mitch McConnell's suite of offices that he won't bring up. There's a lot of talk about if, hopefully when, McConnell is no longer majority leader and the Democrats take over, that they will start passing these bills quickly and may even change the rules a little bit to prevent filibusters from stopping action on them and really changing, you know, some of our structures in government, not just pass bills, but actually reform the way we operate. And there's a lot of talk about that in progressive and labor circles, so that hopefully when we're in the majority, we can stay there and do some good things.
Yeah. Well, you've got momentum on your side. There's more strikes going on in the country. The essential workers that are not getting their PPE, personal protective equipment, are speaking out. And if they're not speaking out, it's because they're afraid to speak out. And right. It's a scary time in America. And I'm just wondering, you mentioned like mobilizations here next week, maybe the week after that. So obviously with that kind of thing happening, that would propel the media to cover these events and then get the dialogue started and put pressure on people like Mitch McConnell. Right. Isn't that the MO here?
Yeah, I mean, he's not completely impervious to pressure. He's running for re-election this year, and he's actually considered in probably the toughest race of his life. So we're going to spend time in Kentucky, and we're going to have people down there next week, actually, and the week after, as you said, outside his office. He's probably got several offices around the state, Louisville, Lexington, other areas, other cities in Kentucky. And we're going to be there, and we're going to challenge him. And hopefully people who feel frustrated and like they're not being heard will realize that the labor movement and the people we support can make a difference in their lives. And, you know, a lot of people are cynical. They don't like politicians of either party. I think this debate around COVID and the response to it hopefully has convinced people there are actually differences that would change their lives. If we pass the HEROES Act and we extended unemployment insurance and they could continue to get a check while they're unemployed through January, that will make a difference in their lives. Republicans are against that, by the way. They say we shouldn't be paying people who are unemployed because it will make them less likely to go back to work when their job opens up. That's divorced from reality. People want to work. They don't want to collect unemployment insurance. It's not enough to live on. So the idea that they're going to stay at home and collect unemployment rather than work is just nonsense. And that's one of the main Republican talking points right now against the HEROES Act.
All right. A lot of work ahead of us.
Soapbox here.
I want you to be on your soapbox.
Okay. Thank
you. All right. We're going to leave it on that note. You take care. Be safe, my friend. Thanks. We'll talk to you in June. Hopefully, we'll get a better picture of what's going on here, okay?
Look forward to it.
Bill Samuel, Government Affairs Director of the Labor Federation. You can find a lot online, including that video, Rich Trumka endorsing Joe Biden on AFL-CIO.com. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Bob Swanson will be joining us talking about the construction industry and suicide. That's next, right here on America's Workforce.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
For over 20 years, organized labor has turned to the BMA Media Group for its communications and events needs because the BMA Media Group knows how to positively impact labor's issues and spread the union message. The BMA Media Group is a union marketing, public relations, production, and events firm. So BMA Media knows what it takes to market union value for you. To learn how the BMA Media Group can assist your labor organization, just visit www.bmamedia.com.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. a half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Once again, welcome back to America's Workforce, recorded here in Cleveland, Ohio, for workers across America. And you can listen to the show, any show we do, wherever you stream podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, just some examples. And we would certainly appreciate you subscribe and give us a rating. 5-star would be nice. We always would appreciate that. Let's go to line number 2 right now. Welcome back to the show. We had him back in March. And if you didn't know, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Bob Swanson is his name, and he's a retired painting contractor affiliated with the Finishing Contractors Association International. He is a suicide loss survivor. In fact, his oldest son died by suicide at the age of 33. This was back in 2009, and Bob has spoken frequently on a national basis to construction industry groups regarding mental illness and suicide prevention. Bob, welcome back to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us once again. We really appreciate your input on the show today. Okay.
Nice to be back, Ed.
All right. You've been doing some reaching out. I know with the pandemic that's in play right now, it hasn't been easy. And as I indicated, we're wrapping up May here. Have you done anything out in the field with the trades? Because just to refresh our listeners, the suicide rate in the trades is, what, 4 times that of the general population? That being said, what have you been doing to get the word out to talk to the trades about this this devastating situation that's going on in America?
Actually, Ed, I've participated in 2 webinars with the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades. They have a very good initiative going. It's called Helping Hand. And what we're trying to do is get the word out that there is help. And obviously, it's hard to ask for help, but there is help out there, and we need to take care of each other.
Specifically, you have a game plan. I don't know if that's the appropriate terminology, but you have various talking points on how you deal with this situation, and obviously the loss of a loved one, is you can speak to that, is very, very emotional, traumatic. I mean, I could go on with a number of descriptions, but you speak from the heart. I was just wondering, how do you handle this kind of situation, Bob?
Well, the situation we're in, first off, you know, just to give you, I noticed some statistics recently, the construction industry in the United States, just about 1 million workers lost their jobs in April, and the unemployment rate as of April is 16.6% versus the national average of 14.7%. So the construction industry is hit very hard. There's obviously a lot of uncertainty, and that is one of the problems our industry has anyhow. I mean, there's uncertainty. Uh-huh. Over length of projects, are there going to be projects? And now we're in really a more critical situation. But what I really talk about in this current situation, Ed, we call it social distancing. We should call it physical distancing. We're still supposed to keep in contact with each other, and we're still here for each other. But the social distancing word is kind of implied, hey, we're supposed to just stay away from everybody. Well, we're supposed to keep distance physically, but not socially. So I've integrated that now into my talks just to say you got to check in with people. Yeah, it's more awkward. We can't do it in person many times, but we can still check in with each other and indicate to each other we're there for them.
Mm-hmm. You pointed out, I remember talking to you back in March, about the tough guy attitude of the typical building trades member. And it's predominantly guys. I know more women are getting into the field, but they just don't want to open up, do they? What's your experience with that?
Well, it is a tough guy culture, both in the office and the field. And nobody wants to show any vulnerability, because I say in my presentations, and I worked this for 45 years, every day is a game day. We don't have slack off days in the construction industry. There's tough schedules. Every day counts. And nobody wants to be left off the team. So if you go to your boss and say, you know, I'm having anxiety issues, or I'm having real issues, I can't show up to work today, the fear is I may lose my job, or my boss mm-hmm. may think unkindly of me, and then people just keep it inside and tough it out. And also, that's a big part of our industry. We tough it out.
And then you throw in the virus on top of this. Now, there's some going to say, well, you know what? It's not going to affect me. I'm a tough guy. You know what? And there's a big chunk of America that, well, I'm not going to wear the mask. You know, I understand that part. How does that play into what's going on right now?
Well, you know, in some ways, I think, though, we maybe have an advantage in the construction industry, because the last 20 years, we've really pushed PPE, personal protective equipment. And I think if we sell this right, hey, you've worn a respirator if you're in a dusty environment, and you've worn safety glasses, and you've worn hard hats, all for your personal protection. Now you got to wear a mask, again, for your personal protection and the protection of your buddies. So I think possibly the construction industry might be in a better place than a lot of other industries for accepting that. It's all about protection and protecting mm-hmm. your neighbors.
Bob, can you share with us a little bit of your outreach, your seminars, your webcasts that you do with the industry, and how you handle this kind of situation? I'd love maybe and just kind of give us a glimpse, and we can also drive people to the website iupathelpinghand.com if you want to get some more. But if you would just share with us right now, we would appreciate
sure.
that.
Sure. Well, first off, you know, about 20% of us in normal times live with a mental illness, and all they are is illnesses of the brain. Nobody wants them. They're treatable. That's the key thing. And then about 10% of us live with substance use disorder. Again, that's a disease of the brain. But like any physical illness, with proper care, you can live with these illnesses. And if you live with these illnesses, that's what we call recovery. So, the big thing is get help and get the treatment you need. And then the other piece is follow your treatment plan. So often, again, if a person's brain isn't quite working right, what they end up doing oftentimes is, well, I'm better, so I don't need to do that anymore. Well, if you're diabetic, you need to take insulin every day, all the time. And if you're living with anxiety disorder or other mental illnesses, you need to take your meds every day. And you need to follow your treatment plan of diet, exercise, sleep, et cetera. So it's really what I really stress. These are all treatable. Then another piece, Ed, if I could go on, is terminology. We typically say someone's bipolar, they're schizophrenic. Well, that labels them with the illness. We don't say somebody's cancer. We say they're living with cancer. So it's really important we start talking different terms. People are living with these illnesses. Don't label them with the illness. And secondly, back to suicide for a minute. It's my opinion that people don't commit suicide. When we say that, we blame them. It's their fault. It's the family's fault. I lived mm-hmm. with a lot of guilt for a long time with my son's death. But My son didn't want to die. He was in a lot of pain. His brain wasn't working properly. And I use the term, he died by suicide or died from suicide. The illness caused his death, no different than cancer. And now COVID-19 causes people's death. They don't want to die. It just, the illness kills them. So right. I think that terminology is a big thing, Ed.
Did I hear correctly? You said like 1 out of 5, so that would be like 20% of Americans on any given day have some form of mental illness. Is that pretty accurate?
That's what I've gotten from National Alliance on Mental Illness. They've used that figure for many years. And the most common mental illness is anxiety disorder, and the second most common is depression. They're both treatable.
And again, it is treatable. The question, Bob, how many people in that group are getting treatments? Do we have any numbers on that or speculation on that?
Speculation is only about 60% actually get the help they need, and there's a number of factors. First off is the shame. Who wants to tell their loved one or their buddy, hey, I'm going to the doc to see him because I'm dealing with depression? There's so much shame around it. So you got to get by that. And then we are really in this country, you talk about lack of hospital ICUs, et cetera, for our current situation. We have a total lack of mental health units across the country and trained psychologists and trained psychiatrists. They're just aren't enough. And typically, if you said, hey, I need to go see a psychiatrist because I'm having some mental health issues, you might wait 12 weeks for an appointment. Well, if you're in crisis with any other health issue, you'd get an appointment right away. So it's a whole bunch of factors, Ed. By and large, the estimates are only about 60% of the people with mental health issues are getting the help they need.
Yeah. And that's something that's got to be addressed right away. You can't wait 6, 7, 8, 10 weeks for help when you're on the edge right now. And then to go back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, that this tough guy image, I can picture this. Somebody's working on a construction site and the other guy said, oh, look at Joe. He's Looney Tunes again. And you got to deal with that kind of stuff. I'm sure you heard those stories before, right, Bob?
Absolutely. He's a wacko. He's crazy. He's off balance. All those terms do not help matters. And again, all it says is it's their fault. We blame them. It's not their fault. So, and then, of course, some of the traits of someone who's living with a mental illness, a lot of anger. And I took my son's anger the wrong way. It's not directed at anyone personally. It's directed at their illness. They're just frustrated. Why can't I get better? A lot of moodiness, you know. And unfortunately, especially at a construction site, that's the last person you want on your crew is somebody that's cranky, you know. So typically we shy away from those folks versus saying, hey, what the hell is your problem, man? Let's talk about it. We got to just deal with it different.
Especially you imagine working on a high rise or something like that and dealing with a situation. So it's so tenuous. One more question here, Bob, before you go. You feel you're making a dent? You've been doing this for quite some time. Just wondering, what's your thoughts? Are you connecting with people? What do you think?
I think I'm connecting with people. It's a slow gain, but more and more construction companies are putting this in their safety programs. More and more unions are putting it, toolbox talks, talking about it at their union meetings. We got a long ways to go, Ed, but I feel we're making headway. It's becoming safe to talk about mental health and mental illness and suicide prevention. And I think we've made some really big gains the last couple of years.
Good. Well, let's keep in touch on this issue. God bless you for what you're doing. And we promise to keep in touch with you. Okay, Bob?
Absolutely. Thanks, Ed. Best to you and your following.
All right. That's Bob Swanson, retired painting contractor, affiliated with the Finishing Contractors Association International. And the website I'd like to drive you through to is IUPAT. That's a Painters and Allied Trades, IUPAT
HelpingHand.com. I-U-P-A-T, HelpingHand.com. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the state of public pensions, and we talk about empowering voters this November. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.